This hour is supported by Robbins Kaplan, LLP, dedicated to redefining excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country.
Live from Macho Blue Earth, Robbins Kaplan Studios, Native Roots Radio.
We went to all the powwows when we were young. At that time, children could not dance. Only people over 50 years of age could dance. Most people do not know this, that the government forbid children to dance Indian. And that was so they could wipe out the culture of the young people, and then finally the new generation would never know what
happened. I'm a member of the American Indian Movement, and I'm from the indigenous nations of the Western Hemisphere.
We American Indians, we can be anything we want to be, except American Indians.
You were here long before any of us were here.
Buju, everybody. My name is Peggy Flanagan. Guabagani Gadikagna Jujuba. I'm from the White Earth Nation, and my family's the Wolf Clan.
There's trouble in Custer, South Dakota yesterday.
The American Indian Movement is a very proud, continuing part of American Indian society. I thank you.
But what I tell you is that we are not backing down. We are here, we will stand here, because we have been here for 10,000 years. We're the home team, and we're not going anywhere. We're rich.
Hey, Kutagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Ahu, Ho-Chunk Raja, Wakunjahade, Hingadena.
We have a great show today. We're going to start out with Emanitam with the news.
Buju, everyone. This is Ogama Ganu Ikwe. The name given to me by my mother is Emanitam. Today is Saturday, August 29th, 2020, and I'm here for Native Roots Radio with some news and updates from Turtle Island this week. The shooting of another unarmed black man in Kenosha, Wisconsin has sparked additional and ongoing protests in Kenosha and other cities across the United States. Jacob Blake, who goes by Jake, was shot 7 times in the back at point-blank range by Rustin Seske of the Kenosha Police Department. The two other officers involved were Vincent Arenas and Brittany Marinek. Officers Seske and Marinek have been placed on administrative leave pending the investigation of the incident. Jake Blake, who is now paralyzed from the waist down due to spinal injury from the shooting, was handcuffed to his bed in a Milwaukee hospital until late Friday evening. Blake's family has told several news outlets, as well as their attorney, that they are not receiving adequate and transparent information regarding the investigation. Attorneys Ben Crump, Patrick Salvi, and Ivory Lamar are representing Jake Blake and his family. Protesters have filed into the streets of Kenosha each night since the shooting of Jake Blake on Sunday, August 23rd. On Tuesday, the third night of protest, violence erupted when 17-year-old Kyle Rittenhouse of Antioch, Illinois, is reported as using an AR-15-style rifle to shoot multiple times. Rittenhouse is accused of killing Anthony Huber, age 26, of Silver Lake, Wisconsin, and Joseph Rosenbaum, 36, of Kenosha, Wisconsin. Anthony Huber was shot in the chest, and Joseph Rosenbaum was shot 5 times in multiple places on his body. A third victim, Gage Grosskrautz of West Allis, Wisconsin, was shot in the arm and is in stable condition. Rittenhouse faces 2 counts of first-degree homicide, 1 count of attempted homicide, 2 counts of recklessly endangering safety, and 1 count of underage possession of a dangerous weapon. Multiple sources indicate that Rittenhouse's defense is that he fired in self-defense. He is currently being held in Lake County, Illinois. Under Wisconsin law, he will be tried as an adult. Rittenhouse illegally transported his weapon across state lines to reach Wisconsin from Illinois, and again when he crossed state lines back to Illinois to turn himself in to authorities in Antioch on Wednesday. Rittenhouse's public defender requested an extension of the extradition hearing to allow for Rittenhouse to obtain a personal attorney. A judge granted this request, and Rittenhouse remains in custody in Illinois awaiting an extradition hearing on September 25th. Facebook and some crowdfunding sites have come under scrutiny in relation to the shooting. The Kenosha Guard page on Facebook was flagged 455 times since its creation. The page had violated Facebook's new rules introduced last week that labeled militia and QAnon groups as dangerous individuals and organizations for their celebrations of violence. In a company-wide meeting on Thursday, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg said that a militia page advocating for followers to bring weapons to an upcoming protest in Kenosha, Wisconsin, remained on the platform because of an operational mistake. According to an internal Facebook report obtained by BuzzFeed News, one Facebook worker wrote in the internal Violence and Incitement Working Group that, to put that number into perspective, it made up 66% of all events reported that day. The internal report also reads that organizers advocated for the attendees to bring weapons to an event in the event description, and that there are multiple news articles about Facebook's delay in taking down the event. The company did not catch the page despite user reports, Zuckerberg said, because the complaints had been sent to content moderation contractors who were not well-versed in how certain militias operate. On second review, Zuckerberg continued, doing it more sensitively, the team that was responsible for dangerous organizations recognized that this violated the policies and we took it down. A spokesperson for Facebook declined to comment to the source. Both Fundly and GoFundMe had active campaigns to raise money for legal fees for Kyle Rittenhouse. According to Newsweek, GoFundMe and Fundly opted to deactivate the campaigns attempting to raise money for Rittenhouse following his arrest on Wednesday. An additional crowdfunding site, GiveSendGo.com, which advertises as being the number one Christian fundraising site, has raised nearly $100,000 for Rittenhouse's legal fees and does not intend to take the page down. The page description maintains that they believe Rittenhouse suffered a traumatic experience and was forced to shoot in self-defense. In national news, yesterday, 57 years to the day since Martin Luther King Jr. gave his I Have a Dream speech, relatives of African Americans killed or injured in recent police encounters took to the same spot on the National Mall to call for social and political change. The march was organized by the Reverend Al Sharpton and was announced on June 4th after the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis. The march was dubbed the Commitment March, Get Off Our Necks, or the 2020 March on Washington. Speakers included Martin Luther King Jr.'s son, Martin Luther King III, and his daughter, Yolanda Renee King, age 12. Reverend Al Sharpton and many family members of those murdered by police, including the family of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and Ahmaud Arbery. Jake Blake's family also spoke. Speaker Martin Luther King III gave mention to Native Americans among his list of marginalized brothers and sisters in the movement. The speakers at the march covered all topics plaguing those of color in the United States: police brutality, voter suppression, adequate social support program funding, and systemic racism. The march began just after dawn and it ended in the afternoon with nearly a half a mile length of people down the Washington Mall. The city had required quarantine for 22 states, so many people tuned in to watch the march via social media. In news on the western border of Minnesota, our relatives, the monarch butterflies, suffered what is being called a massacre in Fargo, North Dakota, on Thursday, after the city sprayed chemicals overnight in an effort to control the mosquito population. Hundreds of dead monarchs piled up in various places throughout the city. City officials say they did not change the practice that they have used in the previous 10 years. Many in the city were outraged or saddened by the issue, as the monarchs had just begun their annual migration. On Thursday afternoon, officials with Cass County Vector Control issued a statement saying spraying was absolutely necessary because the region had a five-year high mosquito trap count and West Nile had been detected in Grand Forks and Wahpeton. In lighter news, the Native American Rights Fund celebrates 50 years this year and named new members on August 26th. Patrice Kanesh, Standing Rock Sioux descendant and activist, joined the team. The NARF website explains that she is known for influencing and inspiring cross-sector leaders to create inclusive economic systems, particularly with Native communities. Samantha Kelty joined as a staff attorney based in the D.C. office. Samantha's focus is on voting rights litigation and eliminating barriers to voting faced by Native Americans. Megan Condon also accepted a position as a staff attorney in the Alaska office. Megan joined the Anchorage office as an Alaska Fellow in 2018. Her work at NARF focuses on protecting tribal natural, cultural, and substance resources. In North Dakota, the FBI is investigating an officer-involved shooting of a Turtle Mountain Chippewa man last weekend. Brandon LaDucer, resident of Belcourt, North Dakota, age 35, was a father to two children. In an email to Native News Online, FBI spokesperson Kevin Smith shared that an officer-involved shooting happened at a private residence in Belcourt late Saturday night, August 22nd, and into the early morning hours of Sunday, August 23rd. The FBI was called to respond to the shooting, and the North Dakota Bureau of Criminal Investigation assisted with the processing of the scene, according to the email. The FBI reported the law enforcement agencies involved in the incident were the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the Rowlett County Sheriff's Office, the Rowlett County Police Department, and the Rolla Police Department. Stephanie LaDucer, the aunt of Brandon LaDucer, said nothing is being shared with the family since the FBI has been involved, which makes them completely left in the dark. Brandon LaDucer's mother was notified by police that there were 5 shots fired in the incident, but according to family, at least 20 shots were fired. When asked for more information about the incident, FBI spokesperson Kevin Smith said the incident is a shooting while officers were present and the circumstances of the shooting are all part of the investigation. Further details, including the officer's identity, are not being released at this time. To end our segment today, I'd like to quote Martin Luther King III from his March on Washington this weekend. "We need to vote as if our lives, our livelihoods, our liberties depend on it, because they do. No person, no people are more keenly aware of the risks of disenfranchisement than those who have suffered from it. There's a knee on the neck of democracy, and our nation can only live so long without the oxygen of freedom. The simple challenge before us is that everyone can cast a ballot, and everyone who can must cast a ballot." As always, thank you, Imigwitch, for tuning in to Native Roots Radio. Remember to wash your hands, wear a mask, be kind to one another, and to get out and vote this November. Back to you, Wakanjahare.
Pinigigi Oglema for the great update in the news. We'll be right back after this short break with Winona LaDuke.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a free, confidential, and anonymous domestic, dating, and sexual violence helpline available at 1-844-762-8483 or by using the chat now icon at strongheartshelpline.org. Advocates offer daily support and referrals for resources, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time.
This message is sponsored by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center. Well, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. We try to reach out every week to Winona LaDuke of Honor the Earth and just check in on what she's doing, because we all know she's doing more than all of us combined. It's just amazing the things going on up in the deep north, and also just what's happening. Winona, thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Nice to hear from you, Robert, as I hang up here in the deep north. So, I want to say this week I went out and checked the wild rice. Manomenake Jesus, this is the wild rice making moon we got going now, and we're starting to make rice. We're harvesting up here.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. And I know, like, just for the little boating I do, we have a boat on the Mississippi River. There's more people doing things locally because, really, we can't go anywhere because of COVID.
Right, right. And I think that what's happened, so last year there was a lot of rain damage to the rice, and so we're all super nervous because torrential storms with climate change, mess up rice. You got all kinds of things you're fighting to protect our rice, mines, pipelines, and torrential storms, just pray hard on those. But so far, really a good crop looks like. And I've been from down by, Mille Lacs area. I was out by Mallard Lake. That wasn't quite right, but people were checking and ready. And then a couple days ago, I went through Leech Lake, and good rice is coming off of those lakes on Leech Lake Reservation. And a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of excitement. And, I just want to say that this time of year is like something else in the north, because everybody's waiting for a lake to open up. There's like all this like passing back and forth information, which lake, which landing, who's buying, how it's knocking. Very exciting time. And the people that are out there, a lot of young people. This isn't like, an old tradition that we're barely hanging on to. This is a rocking new tradition. And this year, that people are going to get paid a better price for rice. I'm a little worried, being someone who resells rice, like how we're going to do it. But I think it's going to be a pretty good year for all of us. And I'm just going to pray hard and keep knocking rice and hopefully buy some rice. I think we bought some on Leech Lake couple of days ago, but coming off of Nature's Lake and Dora, but nice rice. So it's the season, and that's what we look forward to, and that's our lives, you know. And that's part why we're battling so hard on these pipelines and mines, you know. Rice is life.
Well, speaking of which, I had a friend of mine that was up north on vacation, and he was reported to me he couldn't believe how many Enbridge commercials are on running on the radio. He has a business with the radio stations, and he reported back to me he couldn't believe it.
Yeah, it's a really, you know, we don't got the bucks Enbridge does, but Enbridge really wanted the Department of Commerce to not appeal the Certificate of Need. That's what they really wanted, and they spent a lot of money. I'm really wondering how much. Minnesotans for Line 3 did like a phone banking, emails, letters, ads, full page ads, radio spot ads, trying to say Line 3 is the most studied pipeline in the history. Yeah, and the studies all found out it was a bad idea, and the people testified, 68,000 of them saying it was a bad idea. It's still a bad idea. In fact, it's a worse idea now than it was when they originally proposed it. I don't know if it's possible to be worse, but they are inundating the North with disinformation and fake news. And I'm kind of wondering how much they spent. They must have spent a lot of money in the past couple of months, like way more than my budget, that's for sure.
Oh, wow.
It'd be nice to, you know, be able to get the word out that just because you repeat the lie enough times doesn't mean it's true.
Right, exactly. And, you know, it makes me a little sickening, too, because I like to check in, being a high school teacher, on high school sports, and there's Enbridge commercials going on all the time, like it's a good idea, and it's just indoctrinating a lot of our children and the people watching these tournaments. I mean, they're not being dumb about this, but it's I know some people brought signs to I think it was a hockey tournament, no Line 3, but we're trying to fight back. But it makes me sick to my stomach to see how they're advertising.
Yeah, I mean, and it's a bad idea. It just is a bad idea. And what you really wish is that all of the media and all the money that they spend on promoting bad ideas would instead be on promoting solutions. You know, and I was thinking about, I just like little things, because I've seen all the pipes from the Sandpiper. They were piled there and intimidating us for 3 years. And then one day those pipes disappeared from their pipe yards because the Sandpiper, a 30-inch pipe, does no longer exist. So now we got a 36-inch pipe.
Mm.
We got some big pipes. I was trying to think, what could you do with 300 miles of pipe that big? And I was thinking, Enbridge should just donate those pipes to some place like New York City that needs new pipes. You know, there's something good that they could do with those pipes. It's not that we don't need pipes, we just don't need these pipes. You know, the amount of sewer pipes and climate change, all of that we need, like Enbridge could really adapt their pipes for public use, not private benefit. You know, so I got some ideas on how things could work, but, you know, I keep thinking about, you know, these kinds of things. And in the meantime, you know, I'm up here. I'm up in our most traditional place, one of our most great places. I came to Madeline Island here for, you know, our homeland. I'm up here and I'm writing.
Wow.
And I just want to say I'm working on a book. You know, I think, you know, I got a book coming out in the fall.
Yeah.
To be a water protector is what it's called. The Rise of the Wendigo Slayers, coming out with Fernwood and Columbia University Press.
Wow.
This fall. And I'm working on a new book, which I'm far more excited about, which is basically just transition and where we need to go, because it's obvious that you know, Indigenous peoples have the vision of the solutions, and so I'm doing my best to share the stories and vision of a lot of people on this moment in time and how we can transition. And so I'm kind of quarantined, squirreled away up here, you know, praying and doing my best to record these stories or to write these stories, just like you. Back to my life as a journalist. But
yeah,
you know, in the meantime, I'm writing for a couple of days and heading home to Rice. And I'm looking forward to a good season this year. We'll really hope for a lot. You know, our family will eat 300, 400 pounds.
Wow.
we have a big family.
Wow.
You know, we have big extended families up here. So we're not ricing for bucks, we're ricing for food, you know?
Exactly. Just a quick one before we let you go. How important it is for us to, we only got a few days left for the census because 45 has shortened the time, how important it is to be counted, and also how we need to get out and rock the vote.
Oh my gosh. I mean, that's the reality is that, you know, we need to change the power structure of Minnesota to be something that's sustainable and is, you know, going to be good. And And in order to do that, you got to get out and vote, because, you know, the deep north is the deep north because of a lot of shenanigans, but we could really vote and make a change. And across this country, you're seeing Indian people turn out to vote. And obviously we've had, you know, particularly the Obama election was the highest voter turnout in history. We need to do that kind of turnout again. You know, we need to get some people out and at these local elections, because it makes a difference. And so be keeping that in your mind, like how we're going to get our people registered to vote, and then how we're going to vote early so that our ballots are in, and how my tribe and other tribes really needs to declare voting polls to be the same as in tribal elections. Mm-hmm. Because it's really hard to vote on White Earth. You got to drive miles to vote if you didn't get your absentee ballot, and when you could, in fact, vote, it, you know, if the tribe would just change the system so that it would reflect tribal voting polls, you know, and that would make a change. That would make a good difference for our tribes and access. So you don't got to drive 5 miles to vote. You could just go down to your tribal school and vote. That's the way it should be. So hoping for that kind of transition, get out the vote, and making sure that people, you know, people's voting rights are protected.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much for spending a little time with us. I really, really appreciate it. I can't wait to get to your next book, or books, it sounds like. And I'm really jealous that you're up in Madeline Island. So, Peeny Gigi for being on, Winona, and thank you for fighting the great fight that you have been doing for many years.
Doing our best, and thank you for your good work down there. We'll see you later on down the trail, man.
Peeny Gigi. That was Winona LaDuke of Honor the Earth, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. We'll be right back after this short break.
How Matakiape. It is State Representative Mary Kunish and a candidate for the Senate as well. It's August 28th, 2020. First, I want to wish my twin brothers, Tom and John, a happy birthday. And along with that, my sister, Maggie, who came along 2 years after them. So happy birthday to my siblings today. I hope you all the best. I hope all of you are enjoying this beautiful night, cool, calm weather, except there is a little bit of a breeze out there, so that makes it really great. Legislatively, we didn't have much going on this week. Of course, we're still supposedly in our recess, but that doesn't mean we're not working like crazy as we go along. Today, I listened in on the MIAC report, the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, and learned lots of good things that's going on in our state and in our tribes, and looking forward to building a stronger connection and a stronger working relationship between our state and our tribes and all the entities in between. It was really a good listening session, so I appreciate that I get to sit on the MIAC board to find out ways that we can work together legislatively, both for me to bring them information about legislation that's happening, and then them to bring me suggestions for legislation or some of the things that are really struggling within our state. And there are plenty. We're on the road to working on those issues, but it'll be a while. It'll be a while. It was a busy week for Governor Walz. Governor Walz had to call out the National Guard, our Minnesota National Guard, and ask for extra help in Minneapolis. It was not a pleasant night this past week when there was damage done, looting done, violence to the downtown area, and that unrest once again came after the false rumors about a police shooting by a young man down on the Nicollet Mall, and it turned out that the young man shot himself, which is always a tragedy. I think that we are experiencing an incredibly high amount of mental health issues, not just on our streets, but in our schools and in our homes. And it certainly is something that we need to start making headway in, finding ways to get the services needed to folks across the slate. You know, as a teacher, I see more and more issues coming forward, and I'm a firm believer that that some of this historic trauma has been handed down genetically. I think I've mentioned that before, and given the past recession and all of the civil unrest now, the pandemic, distance learning, folks losing their job, it's just exacerbating everything. And so I think it's really important that we start to look forward to different ways of supporting those folks that are dealing with mental health issues. And then, of course, we want to make sure that our communities are safe. And again, with the governor calling out those extra help and having curfew two nights in a row, it seems like things are a little bit calm. But what I thought was really interesting, too, is what happened in the sports world. You know, the athletes from across the board took a stand for Black Lives Matter, and they did it in a way that is very, I think, effective for most people, because sports is certainly everybody's topic of interest. And the fact that on Wednesday night there was an unprecedented Wildcat strike, and all of these teams refused to play their regularly scheduled games. So the Milwaukee Bucks, who else? Miami, Salt Lake City, women's basketball. I think the Twins didn't play. Just like across the board, the athletes and the teams just said, you know what, we're not playing. We've had enough. And we're standing to say that Black lives matter, not that everybody's lives don't matter, but this constant shooting of young Black men has to stop. It has to stop at some point. So what else is going on? Last night, another beautiful night, I was able to join some other Native women and guys as we relayed relay for our water walk. We know that we're all connected by water, and it's our role to respect and protect the water that makes Minnesota so special. 10,000 lakes plus all the streams and creeks and rivers that it has. And so last night, in reference and contemplation, in a way to show our respect to the Nibby water, I joined Maggie Lorenz from Wakan Tipi and the Phelan Project over in St. Paul, and we walked the entire Phelan Lake as our leg of the water walk, and we were part of a relay that started in northern Minnesota and is coming all the way down here. It was inspired by the Mother Earth Water Walkers that was found by Josephine Mandeman, and she set in motion a water ceremony at the headwaters of the Mississippi. And so this water was carried all the way down by women in a very respectful, reverent way, and we got to be a part of that last night. It was passed from one water protector group to individuals, and then passed to the next group, who will then carry it and take it all the way to its last final walk. And then that's going to be at the Public Utilities Commission tomorrow. And so I was really honored to walk with these women and these men and show the respect for water, as it is our life sustenance. Without water, we can't survive, and neither can the rest of the world. And very, very pleased to be able to be a part of that. So thank you, Maggie Lorenz, for inviting me to walk along. And of course, our good old Robert Pilot was there along with some other really great folks. But one other really exciting thing that I would like to share with you that's really positive is that one of our Native American authors won the 2020 Distinguished Artist Award given by the McKnight Foundation, and that is Marcy Rendon. I don't know if you have read her books, but I read them and I just loved them. Marcy is an enrolled member of the White Earth Nation, and she's the very first Native American woman to receive this award in its 25-year history. Last year, if I don't know if you remember me sharing this with you, but the award went to another Native American. This time it was an Ojibwe painter, Jim Denomi. And I know that Marcy's probably pretty pleased to be the first woman and the second Native American to receive this award. And I would always suggest that you look for her mystery books. She's the author of Cache Black Bear Mystery Series that starts with Murder on the Red River and Girl Gone Missing. Probably from those titles, you can figure what those are a little bit about, and I can't wait for the third one to come out. She's also written a bunch of nonfiction children's books, including Powwow Summer. So she continues to write as a poet and a playwright, and really proud that the McKnight Foundation recognizes Marcy's commitment to amplifying our Native American stories and drawing attention to the plight of missing and murdered Indigenous women. I also sit on the board of the American Indian Library Association, and I had a Zoom meeting with them today, and just had an incredible conversation with Native librarians, tribal librarians, public librarians across the country, who really focus in on the value and the necessity for our literature written by Native Americans, for Native Americans, and for the general public. It's really important that we are, again, through stories and through the facts of the matter, educating the public on the history of our ancestors, whether you're from Alaska all the way down to South America, and here we are in between as in woodland and prairie folks. Our stories have been told by other people, and it's so important that we tell the stories and we tell the facts as they are, and not through the lens of colonizers. And so if you get the chance, go over to Birchbark Books and get Marcy Rendon's books. I think you will enjoy them thoroughly. School is starting. Put that on your kids' reading list for the year, and send Marcy a note through her Facebook or whatever way you can, and give her congratulations, because she certainly deserves it. Well, that's all for me. My time is up. I wish you all a beautiful weekend. Take care of each other. Wear your mask. Wash your hands. Distance when you can. And just be good to each other. Take care, everyone. Wopula Tonka.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Each week, we are totally blessed to have Ruth Buffalo, North Dakota House Representative, District 27, on our show. And this is no different. She's on again, and we love talking to her. Welcome, Ruth Buffalo.
Yes, Mazagitas. Thank you for having me.
Well, we just had the RNC last week, and things aren't shifting like they used to years ago. The votes would, everyone would get a little bump, but I think everyone's pretty entrenched with who they're going to support. I think one of the things that we've really talked about and worked on is getting the vote out, and I think we should talk a little bit about that at first.
Yes, it's such a critical point in in time. And so we hope that everybody will really pay close attention to this election and participate. I know it might be scary for like first-time voters or might seem really confusing, but I think once you kind of dive in, you'll find that it's not as scary as you think or not as complex, even though we're trying our best to simplify messaging, you know, to help people get to the polls or request an absentee mail-in ballot application. And so North Dakota, we don't require voter registration, but there's the catch is the street addresses, which is complex for and challenging for a lot of our rural communities. So not only tribal, but even rural communities across North Dakota face challenges with street addresses. And so just encouraging everybody to continue to contact your county auditors. I was going to say Cass County auditors, but mm-hmm. So in Fargo, we would go through or contact our Cass County auditor, but you know, places like Fort Berthold Indian Reservation, there's six different counties. And so one has to be very, very, you know, persistent in making sure you contact your county auditors, because they need to hear from us. They need to also be held accountable too, you know, and making right. sure that they're getting out good information to the public. Mandaree, my home community on Fort Berthold Indian Reservation, it's split into two different counties. So if you live way out in the country, it's Dunn County. And then in Mandaree, it's McKenzie County. And so in the last election cycle, the Dunn County polling location was shut down with no notice. And so a lot of our elderly live out in the country in Dunn County in the Mandaree area, and they had to drive all the way around about an hour and a half to 2 hours to get to the next polling location in Dunn County, you know. And so we need to be asking these questions early on and being proactive, and we can't trust that somebody is working hard on our behalf. We mm-hmm. have to be our own advocates. So
exactly. Have you ever heard the story, and I guess I'm asking you this in regards to people that are not happy with the candidate, specifically Biden, I should say. And have you ever heard that story about it's not a marriage, it's more like a bus ride? Have you ever heard that story?
I believe so. It's so important that we participate. We can't sit this election out. We can't sit any election out, you know. Mm-hmm. We have to participate because we have to think of those that are more vulnerable than ourselves. You know, we have to think of others who will be directly impacted by poor policies implemented by a particular administration. So we have to think bigger than outside of ourselves and our circle or what we face on a regular basis. And so we really have to be considerate of others and vote for the more sound candidate. Mm-hmm. And so we cannot afford to protest or by not voting because that really screams privilege to me. Mm-hmm. And so we have to really think of those less fortunate, more vulnerable, underserved, marginalized populations that will be directly impacted. And I really believe that we have to do that. So
that's wow, that's a really, really, really good way of putting it. And I'm sure you've said that a few times, but it really resonated with me today. You know, the bus story is just basically, it's not a marriage. It's like a bus ride. And then you get on the bus. Are you going to get on the bus because it's going to get you close to your destination? Or you're just not going to get on the bus and you won't even get to your destination. And I think that's kind of the short story of the bus ride is that, you know, we need to get on the bus. And then once we get people in that see close to what we see, we can push them more in our direction. Because, I mean, nobody was talking about gay marriage 20 years ago. Nobody was talking about universal health care, 6 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. And the work doesn't end on election day, you know, for many of us, including yourself. I'm sure, like, I know I'm preaching to the choir, but we still have to continue working for a more just society. You know, voting and participating in this election is just one of the responsibilities that all of us carry. And so we still have to continue pushing forward for what we want to see for the future generations.
Well, that's exactly it. And I think, you know, preaching to the choir, I think one of the things for me when I listen to shows like this or listen to people like you, it gives me more ammunition in a sense to be able to speak to people that are possibly not going to vote this cycle or are just going to vote, throw their vote away. So I think it's really important that that you're talking the way you talk and preaching the choir, but also giving us some information that we can use when we get in discussions with our family and relatives about voting.
Right. And it's, you know, I think we're so accustomed to being in crisis mode that, you know, let's try to be a little bit more proactive and, you know, stories, I think of like the Three Sisters stories, and you can modify it to like your geographic location, like the Red River or, you know, like where there's three sisters, they see babies in the water and then two sisters jump in right away and they start kind of doing an assembly line and handing the babies to each other and getting them safely to shore. But the third sister keeps walking up to the shore and they're like, where are you going? Come help us. And she's like, no, I'm going to go see who is putting these babies in the water, you know, like trying to get to the root cause of issues. And so voting is just one of our many responsibilities that we need to do in order to make sure that we get the future that the future generations deserve. It's not going to happen overnight, but we just cannot sit this election cycle out. We can't. Exactly. We have to vote. So.
Yeah, well said. And one thing I want to leave you with real quick is that the census is coming up. And one of the things that's really exciting for me with the census is looking back and seeing my great-great-grandfather, my great-great Choka, and, you know, my grand Choka, and then seeing my Gaga, who's my grandma, on these and figuring out who's who in the family. And they did them by hand back then. So it is our tradition to answer the census. So I think we should really change the thinking on that too.
Yes. I mean, you know, there's a great amount of mistrust or distrust, you know, with the federal government and, you know, looking at the census rolls where one might have even just wrote anything down because they didn't see us as human beings, you know, as Native American people. Or indigenous peoples of these lands. But, you know, times are changing. We have to participate in order to get counted, because if we don't get counted, you know, our tribal communities get hit hard with the lack of funding. And it could even mean an additional congressional seat for North Dakota. Like, we have two U.S. Senate seats and one U.S. House seat. So by participating in the census, you know, there's so many benefits to it, but and it is also holding the federal government accountable. And so we need to hold them accountable and spin it that way and participate, you know, because we can't be erased, you know, and by making sure that you're checking the box American Indian or Native American and putting your tribal affiliation in there is important, because these policies were meant to erase us completely in this day and age. And so we're still here. And so we need to participate and get counted.
Wow, exactly. And we'll leave it at that. Thank you so much for spending some time with us each week. It's really, really a huge deal for us here at Native Roots Radio to have your voice out on our airwaves and all across Turtle Island. So Pini Gigi, Ruth, for being on.
Thank you. My District 27 in North Dakota appreciates you and appreciates you giving us this platform to share a little bit about what's happening, and then my family and my community and my tribal nation also. So, Mazagidad, thank you.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Hey, welcome back to Hour 2 of Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. This show is dedicated to those who give back.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
We are the resistance. We are in a way.
Because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts.
All things are relative to what we do to everything we do to ourselves.
We must live in balance with the earth.
Hey, I want to introduce my awesome congressional pilot. Wendy has been an animal advocate for many years. She's volunteer state Minnesota council member for the Humane Society of the United States, and she works on animal issues at the state level. And she also does this awesome, geez, it's almost 4 years that you've done this awesome
sacred animal section.
Wow, it's been 4 years.
Almost.
And I get so excited every week to talk about animals. I'm, you know, to have this platform to just bring awareness about what's going on in with, you know, animals in the United States and throughout the world. So I'm really happy to do that. But yeah, Robert, you mentioned that I am a volunteer state council member for the Humane Society of the United States. And I get this newsletter mailed to me. It's called All Animals, and it is from the Humane Society of the United States. I think it comes every 3 months or so, but it has like all kinds of articles in it. And I really, you know, love to sit down and read through it to find out what's going on in the animal world. By the way, my name is Hana Jihihani, and that means cares for them. And I was given that name by my Dega, and I always thank him every single week. So thank you again, as always, Dega. Hello. Yeah, so this newsletter for the fall of 2020, I just got it actually yesterday, had this article about horse racing in it. And Robert, you know how I loathe that sport. Not love it. I loathe the horse racing sport of horse racing. But this is what HSUS right now is working on. So the problem is we're not going to stop horse racing right now. I mean, we're working to make changes, but to stop it is really, you know, it's not going to happen, probably in my lifetime anyway. But here's an article here. It's called "A Safer Bet: Efforts to Protect Horses Pick Up Speed." That's kind of a little cute thing, right?
Play on words.
And here it is. Quote, "Enough is enough." Representative Paul Tonko, Democrat from New York, asked a panel of horse racing experts at a congressional subcommittee hearing in January. Three horses in 3 days had to be euthanized after sustaining injuries in Santa Ana Park racetrack in California earlier in the month. From late December 2018 through February 2020, 45 horses died at the famed track. That's only 14 months. 45 horses died. That's 3.2 horses per month. That's unacceptable to me, anyway. Other people might say, well, whatever. But anyway, such horrific deaths aren't limited to Santa Ana. Spectators witness fatal accidents at race tracks across the country with alarming frequency. People are aware now that many horses die when racing, says Valerie Pringle, equine protection campaign manager for HSUS. And HSUS is just the shorthand for the Humane Society of the United States. And what they want to do, they want to stop doping. So what they do is they give these horses drugs before they race. It's a water pill. It's called furosemide. People take it to get rid of edema symptoms or water weight symptoms. And this kind of gets the excess fluid and water out of the horses, and they can race faster. And of course, we all know that they're given steroids also. So listen, if baseball players and football players and every other professional player in sports can't use steroids and drugs before they perform, neither should horses. So lawmakers and reform-driven industry members hope to get the industry on a better track with Horse Racing Integrity Act. And the act would ban race day medications, substantially increase out of competition testing, and grant control over rulemaking, testing, and enforcement oversight regarding drugs and medication to a new independent authority created by the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency. Now, I think this is a really important thing, because what happens is we're not going to be able to stop horse racing, right? But we can make things harder for the industry, right? We could make more regulations for them, make them comply to treat the horses better. And I think a lot of people out there think that these horses, right, they make the sport seem very elegant, right? So women go there. I don't know if they still wear those big hats with flowers, but all, you know, very rich white people go to these races, and they're racing on these placing bets on these horses. And some of these horses really bring in thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. And a lot of people think after the horse is done racing and they can't race anymore, they're going to this nice little farm and they're going to have a nice little retirement, right? Well, that's not true. What happens to most of these horses, some of them do get adopted and they go out, but most, the majority of these horses go to slaughter. They get on trucks. And they travel for days on end with no food, no water, and they go to slaughterhouses that are in Mexico and in Canada. In the United States right now, we don't have any horse slaughterhouses, and we hopefully we will keep it that way. But the horses will go to Mexico, and they'll go to Canada, and they go through a horrific slaughter. And then guess what? Their meat is sold overseas for human consumption. So this is a horrific industry. For those of you out there who go to the horse track and bet on the horses, maybe think twice, maybe learn a little bit more about the truth of this industry. We could also speak out. We can call our U.S. representative and senators to co-sponsor this Horse Racing Integrity Act, which will, if it's passed, it will just bring more, you know, the industry will just have to step up and have to comply with certain industry standards. And this will make it better for horses, better for people, less horses hopefully will die. How much time do I have?
You got a little bit longer. I have a couple questions off the subject when you're done with your segment.
Okay. That, I just want to tell you a story about this person who I knew, and he was a client where I worked. And what he did was, and I've told the story before on the air, he worked in the horse industry. And what he would do is he would travel with the horses from racetrack to racetrack to racetrack. And he said to me, Wendy, these horses are kept in pristine stables. They're air conditioned. There's no flies. It's so clean. You would not believe it. There's no smells. But the way they train these horses, you will not even believe it. It breaks my heart when I see what happens to these horses every single day on the training track. And he had tears in his eyes, and his voice was cracking when he was telling me the story. Because the people, right, when people go see, they just see the glamour and the glitz and the horses and the, you know, all the, you know, glitz and glamour of the day. They don't know what really happens to the horses. So,
well, it's just an amazing thing that these little ankled animals hold up all this weight, and it's so easy for them to break a leg
exactly.
and just running, and it's just unbelievable how the race industry is doing to the animals. Not to mention these people pulling people around in the park too.
Right.
I mean, that's a whole nother
story, right? And a whole nother segment. But I'm glad you brought that up, because usually what they do is they race these horses before they're fully developed, right? So their bones aren't always so strong as they should be, right? But you said you wanted to say a few things off subject, but just keep an eye out there. Let's be aware of what's going on with animals, and let's get down to the nitty gritty. On the surface, things look pretty and shiny, but when we look at the deep, it's really a horrible place.
Well, we got an email today, as a matter of fact, or yesterday, and one of them was asking if you could repeat Cruelty Cutter. I mean,
and
so repeat it a couple times tell everyone, we know what we're talking about. Tell everyone what we're talking about.
Yeah, so Cruelty Cutter is an app. It's a free app you can get for your Android or iPhone. It's called Cruelty Cutter. You just go to the App Store and you put it on your phone, and what you can do is you can scan the barcode of products, deodorant, hairspray, you know, shampoo, all kinds of makeup. You just scan the barcode, and what it will tell you is if that product was tested on animals or not. Anytime I go shopping, I just bring out my phone and I start scanning products that I want to buy. If I want a lipstick, right, or a eyeshadow, or, you know, mascara, or shampoo, whatever it is I want to use, I'll scan the product and it will tell me whether it's tested on animals or not. So it's called Cruelty Cutter. It's a free app. Just put it on your phone and then you could scan the barcode.
Yeah, I'd say that one more time. And then we want to give a shout out to a listener in California who sent that email.
Oh, awesome. Well, thanks for sending me that. It's called Cruelty Cutter. The face, let me see if I could find it on my phone. I have my phone right here. The picture of it is a paw print. It's like a turquoise color, a light turquoise color with a darker turquoise color, and it's a little paw print.
And it's
like
free. It's free.
Yeah. Cruelty Cutter. It's really, really easy to use. If you find an item, if you scan it and it says, it'll say bite back. This product is tested on animals.
Wow.
You could hit alternative and it'll give you alternative products that are available that are cruelty free. So I do not buy any products that are tested on animals. If you look at our house and our drawers and our cabinets under they're messy, but they don't have any, they don't have any products that are tested on animals. And I feel very, very strongly about that. And a lot of the industries out there, the major cosmetic companies are switching. There's our cat, Lucy.
Right.
She just busted through the door. But they are all changing because people are aware of this and people don't want to buy cruel products. So Maybelline, L'Oreal, they are all coming out with a line that is cruelty-free. So check it out.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, happy retirement. If people didn't hear on this show that you're retiring, not from radio, but from your J-O-B, and you're going to be doing more things that fill your heart, but
yep.
Float your boat too.
Yep.
Works.
September 30th is my final day of working. 2020. Yeah.
Peeny geeky for all you do, Wendy, and all this information you have about our sacred animals and our sacred beings. This week was just another great reminder of what we need to look out for.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Robin.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back. After this short break.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a free, confidential, and anonymous domestic, dating, and sexual violence helpline available at 1-844-762-8483 or by using the chat now icon at strongheartshelpline.org. Advocates offer daily support and referrals for resources, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time.
This message is sponsored by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakanja Hare. Each week we have a great segment here from Nancy Bolio up in the deep north, talking about what her truth and what's going on up there. And also Nancy's like the co-host and producer of Rock the Vote Native Style, which you can hear on AM 950 on Tuesdays at 2, and also everywhere all across Turtle Island via Facebook Live, and also, of course, on iTunes under the Native Roots Radio Network banner. Welcome, Nancy.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Pilot. It's always a pleasure to be on the show, and I'm up here in northern Minnesota where the weather looks perfect today, and I wish I was down in Minneapolis today because there's an awesome event taking place, and that is the water relay to Stop Line 3. And I know yesterday you were a part of that, weren't you?
Yeah, it was 2 days ago.
Okay.
And we were at Lake Phelan with Maggie Lorenz's group.
Yeah, and today they're going to deliver the water. Our health professionals are going to deliver the water over to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And from there, our awesome people at Minnesota 350 down there in Minneapolis are going to carry the water from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency over to the state capitol, where they'll pass it over to the Sunrise Movement. So if people are out there wanting to help take care of the water and want to, you know, a really beautiful way to do that, what they could do is sign up for our relay for our water, because it's focused on our commitment to the water through celebration, expression of gratitude, and actions to protect it. And we're led by Anishinaabe leaders who face immediate threats to disruption of the pipeline, and those in our traditional ways and are deeply connected to the water. So it's in our best interest to say, hey, I got time to stand in solidarity. And it's such a beautiful movement. And it actually started up here in northern Minnesota, and it's down in Minneapolis. And by the end of the racing season, it'll have journey its way back up to northern Minnesota, where we're going to have a celebration and bring the water back home. And throughout its journey, it's had prayers with people met new friends, and it's just been a beautiful moment, Robert.
Yeah, it is, and a great symbol, and really, I know you were riding your bike with that water, so it was awesome to see it here down in the Twin Cities.
Right. You know, it was a challenge, and you know, I encourage people to challenge themselves, because sometimes we don't take the time to even challenge ourselves, and sometimes that builds our inner strength when we put challenges in front of us. And I'm not no avid bike rider, but I gave it everything I got, Robert. And first day my bike broke down, I was really, really bummed out. But the second day, my bike was working again, and I pedaled 19 miles, first time in my whole life.
Wow.
It was an experience of a lifetime, and I found out I like to ride bike. And I also found out too that I like to just show up and help protect the water and the environment and racial justice. And so up here in northern Minnesota, we're working really hard. We just finished 2 weeks of training, Rock the Vote Native style training. And now this weekend and yesterday, we were just working on our public service announcements, because we really need all of our Native relatives listening to go out there and encourage their friends, family, and neighbors that, you know, this is an important election right now. And when we talk about racial justice, we have to keep in mind, we have to go out there and vote for those people that align with our values and people that are willing to say, hey, you know, Black lives matter, Brown lives matter, we all matter. And I think if we start showing up and pulling a chair up to the table, I think that's the best way that we're going to seek racial justice. And so I'm excited to say here in northern Minnesota, we got a $10,000 grant, Robert.
Wow.
And that is to create that space of what environmental and racial justice looks like, based around treaty responsibility and what it takes to transition to that. So we're going to be calling on our tribal elected officials, our local elected officials, and people that are, you know, in the community that bring a lot of strength to some of these movements that we're working on. So we're going to create this like round table dialogue. We're going to set some scenarios out. And one of the scenarios is, what does the future look like if we don't do anything? And then the second, third, and fourth scenarios, we're going to implement things that will help change our communities by, you know, sustainability practices and treaty responsibility. And what does the future look like if we act as good neighbors and be good stewards of the earth as the treaty is intended? So we are in the beginning phases of that roundtable discussion, and I'm happy to work with Sam Grant with Minnesota 350 to create that space here in northern Minnesota.
Wow, that's really exciting. Just to back up a second about Rocking the Vote Native Style, I think it's so important that we talk about the bus story, and it's so important to remind our relatives. Also with the census, it's really important because a lot of people that it affects are underserved, and we need to support them any way we can, because it's a bigger picture that we have to really engage in, as opposed to a personal picture.
Right. And, you know, I understand a lot of people are discouraged, you know, from voting, but, you know, what we need to learn is that when we don't vote, our voices aren't heard, and we have to learn from our past experiences that discouragement ain't going to get us anywhere. Just supporting each other, encouraging each other to vote, and even helping people get to the voting polls or teaching them how they need to register. So we have online tools this COVID year, and so we're creating spaces online, and we're going to have fun too, Robert, while we do that. And so people can register to vote, and they can vote right from home, mail it right from home. You don't even have to leave the comfort of your home to have your voice included in this election. And so that's what we're working really hard on right now, is making sure that we're reaching every part of northern Minnesota across the state. We don't want to leave any of our relatives out of voting. And so we encourage everyone to tune in and be a part of that and engage in, let's do this, Robert. We can rock that vote Native style.
Yeah, I can't wait for the t-shirts. I can't wait. So one of the things, too, is it's really important, too. We got to kick it in on the census, too, because we need to be we need to be counted. And I just want to throw that out, because I know I can look back at censuses hundreds of years ago and see my relatives, my bloodline, and my relatives all in the house, and what they were counted by hand. And so we need to tell people that that's our way, too. You know, don't be afraid of the government, because we are the government, and we need to start thinking that way.
Right. And, you know, Mr. Trump has shortened the census deadline by a month. So we really, really, really got to encourage the people to get out and do the census report. Again, you could do that right from the comfort of your home. You don't even have to get out and do that. And it actually will define how many representation, you know, of people in the House and the Senate. And again, when these people are running for office, it's not just a part of the census. It's also a part of voting for those people. And if we don't show up and vote for these people, our words may continue to fall on deaf ears. And we have great candidates out there that align with our values. We have relatives that are willing to sit at the table and be part of the decision-making process. And that's actually exciting because, you know, that's inspiring to me and to our youth that we can show up and we know how to show up now. So guess what? We're learning how to play their game and we're going to get better at it.
Right, and that's totally visible by how many Native candidates we have up north and also all the federal candidates we have all across Turtle Island that are Native American.
Right, and again, you know, this is the most important election of our lifetime right now. We've seen in the last election, half the people didn't vote, and this is what we got. We got Trump. So we can't live in another 4 years of Trump. It's getting uglier by the day. We know up northern Minnesota here, we're having some racial divide. And, you know, it's getting kind of scary just to go down the road and see all these Trump signs everywhere now. And I was just telling my son yesterday, I said, had they had a different, you know, candidate for the president, what if Mitt Romney was running? Would you see Mitt Romney signs all over the place? Probably not. You wouldn't. But, you know, the reason why you're seeing Trump everywhere, because Trump gave him that platform for hate and division and all that ugly stuff they're bringing to the table now. So that's what's really scary about this president, is that he created that rhetoric. And now people are open to say, hey, I can hate you if I want, because the president thinks it's okay. And I think it's okay, too. So it seems like we're going back in time now, Robert, and we can't let that happen. And we're going to show up and we're going to outvote Trump, and we're going to find good people. And, you know, there's a long way ahead that we have to think about. But for now, this is what we have, and we have to elect Biden. And we have to work with candidates that are willing to listen. And I think we have candidates right now that are willing to listen and really stick their neck out and make sure that we're being heard. And that's why I'm working so hard this election, because I feel that good stuff coming on.
Exactly. And make sure everybody, if we vote as much as we did in the last Obama election, this will be no problem. So we need to make sure that our native relatives know how important our vote is.
Right.
It's so important.
Right. And then, you know, looking back at the Obama election, you're so right, Robert. So many people came out for that. And we need to do that again, even more so this time. And I think if we all get out and vote, I think there's good things that are about to happen. And like I said, this dialogue here in Bemidji that's about to happen, you know, here this fall, that really sets the stage for other communities to do what we're going to do. And so we're going to work really hard here in Beltrami County, and we're going to create that roundtable discussion in a good way where our people are at the center of those discussions. And I don't think we should be running for office. There should always be that designated spot for us and all these levels of government, because they're on our land. But unfortunately, we have to run for office just like everybody else does in order to be heard. But, you know, I think voting is going to really make sense if we let it happen. And we must, Robert, rock that vote like no other this time. Well, I'm going to give it everything we've got and then some.
Well, there you have it. The star of Rock the Vote Native Style on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. on AM 950 and all across iTunes and all Spotify and all those things under the Native Roots Radio Network design. Nancy Bolio of Bemidji 350 and Minnesota Rise, and just doing so much. Peeny Gigi for being on every week.
Well, thanks for having me again. And again, everybody out there listening, please do your census and make sure you're registered to vote and sign up for an absentee ballot. You can vote right from home, and it doesn't need to be notarized. It's really simple this year, so make sure you give it all the effort you got, because we're going to rock this vote Native style. Thank you.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break.
This is Ogama Gnu Ikwe. It's a spider. For Native Roots Radio. Can I kill it? My daughter spotted a spider on the shelf in our kitchen the other day and asked my partner if she could kill it. He told her yes, and she was poised to do so. Canister raised in the air to squash the little arachnid. No, I said. She stopped, the canister still in midair. Don't you kill that spider. It didn't do anything to you. Confused by the mixed messages and my sudden reaction, my daughter fled to my bedroom and threw her face down on my bed, her eyes on the edge of tears. I followed her in with a sigh, and I told her I wasn't mad at her, but that we needed to talk about something important. I took her into my lap and explained that there are not really any spiders that can kill you that live in Minnesota, because it's so cold they can't live here for very long, even if they do accidentally get here from somewhere else. Furthermore, that is most likely not one of those very rare, scary spiders. My daughter has an auntie who is terrified of spiders. I don't judge her. I have an irrational fear of snakes, despite that there really aren't any poisonous ones where we live in Minnesota. I prodded my daughter about why she was so afraid of the spider, and if it had anything to do with her auntie's fear. She adores this particular auntie, and she's the only one that goes by auntie instead of auntie. My daughter nodded silently, as if a little light had gone off in her head. I explained that we have to be careful not to let other people's fears wear off on us. We need to check with why we are afraid, if the fear really belongs to us, and whether or not it makes sense to our heart. If she really is truly afraid of spiders, I said I understand. That I really am scared of snakes, and it doesn't make sense, but I don't go murdering one if I see it. I told her the most important thing she needs to know is that our fear does not justify taking life. That little spider did not hurt you, and probably doesn't want to, I told her. It eats bugs and flies, and is probably there to eat the fruit flies in the kitchen for us. I told her about my nephew, her cousin, who is only 5 weeks younger than her, and how he had an encounter with a spider when they were about a year and a half old. They didn't know many words at the time, but he spotted it on the wall of the hallway, about halfway up, and ran excitedly to everyone in the house, saying loudly, "It's a spider! It's a spider!" He was full of joy and shared it with all of us. I also reminded her of an Ojibwe creation story, how I learned it, where the spider made a big basket and lowered the first people to Earth. We have a children's book about it. It's written in both English and Ojibwe, and some nights she'll listen to me struggle through the Ojibwe parts patiently. She remembered the book right away. She seemed calmer and more settled. I treaded lightly. But I went a little deeper into the concept of fear. I asked if she remembered what we had told her about what happened to George Floyd in Minneapolis this summer, why we were out holding signs, and why I spent the weekend in the cities, even though it was a dangerous place to be. She nodded solemnly. She asked if that meant that she should be afraid of the police. I told her to always be cautious of police, but that's not my point. My point is that when the police hurt or kill unarmed people, they often claim it was because they feared for their life. She asked why. She asked why. If the person didn't do anything to them, she said, why would they do that? Why would they kill someone, Mama? I took a deep breath, and I softly said, that, my girl, is the same thing you tried to do to that spider. We sat in silence for a moment, and I asked if she needed a hug. She hugged me and went off to play. She still seemed calm. Well, she was calm and took that with a lot more grace than I probably expected her to. I spent the rest of the night analyzing whether or not that was an appropriate topic for my 7-year-old. And then had a moment of realization at my privilege. Because I have a friend who's black, and she has 4 sons. Her oldest son is in his 20s and lives in the Twin Cities. Her youngest is in the same grade as my daughter and their friends. I don't know to what level she talks to her boys about this, but I do know that she brought them out when our local town had a little Black Lives Matter protest, I guess if you could call it that. Some Trump supporters had parked their big trucks on the opposite side of one of our busy streets to counter-protest us when people started showing up with Black Lives Matter signs, just to make the point, to get the word out. It wasn't meant to start anything, but it went on like that for a couple of weeks. Some of us would be on one side, and they would be on the other. They made it a big point to drive their big trucks loud and fast past us, to blow a whole bunch of exhaust in our faces. They played loud music, and a lot of them yelled obscenities. Some of us on the other side yelled back. For the most part, it was peaceful. On one of the nights, I met my friend there, and she had 3 out of her 4 boys with her. My partner and I had come with signs. The one I made was the lyrics to a Sam Cooke song. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change is gonna come. Yes, it is. The changes that need to happen in this country start with us, at home, with our children, with our family, with our friends. I hope if you're ever given the opportunity, like I was, with the spider, to point out and to teach someone how easy it is to give in to the influence of fear from other people, to recognize your own privilege, and how to choose love and respect, that you take the time to do so.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are Haluza Nation.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. We love having Uncle Curtis give us updates on what's going on all over Turtle Island and Minnesota. And here he is, Uncle Curtis. Welcome.
Aho, Pinagigi Chuske. My name is Maske Hanajinga. I walk on the white clouds. My colonized taxpayer name is Curtis West. And I always got to give a shout out to my beautiful wife, Kim. And I want to say ha-ho to all my family and relatives and friends in 4 directions. We pray all is well. Remember to mask up, social distance, and stay safe and blessed. My Chuske here lets me do a few things, so I'm going to go ahead and do them. I do some birthdays, some shout-outs, some events, and my Chuske here is going to help me out with some events, really important events that are coming up. So I'm going to start off with these birthdays. One down to our relative down there, in a Chuske of ours down there in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. We want to say happy birthday to Logan Ruffridge. We want to say another one out here to a Native sister of ours, Mary Kay Person Fable. We want to say happy birthday. And another one we want to say happy birthday to is Michelle Shaw. We want to say happy birthday to another relative of ours, Melanie Rourke. And we got to, always got to look out for our elders and give much respect to them, you know. A lot to learn from them elders. And so I'm going to give some elders shout-out birthdays here. But I want to start off with one that's real important to me. You know, my Nunu, my sister, Lydia, she's the oldest of the family. And I want to wish her a happy heavenly birthday. She would have been 76 years old, so happy heavenly birthday to Lydia in heaven. So I want to say happy birthday. And then we got some elders over here too. And before I get going any further, like I said, it's really important to look out during this pandemic that check in on your elders. You know, they might, you don't need social distance. You can phone call away, see if they need anything, groceries or something to drink or something, you know, just check in, make sure they're safe. So we want to say happy birthday to Herman White Rabbit Jr. want to say happy birthday to a friend of mine from God's country over there, too. His name's Freddie. We call him Freddie, but it's Frederick Kingswan. I want to say happy birthday. And another of our, me and Chuska's little Chokas over there from God's country. I want to say happy birthday to this elder, Gordon Thunder. Another elder over there we're going to shout out to is Joseph Lone Tree and George Lone Tree, too, also. And I want to give shout-outs out. Now, first off, I want to give a shout-out to Dave Hutch and the crew of the Minneapolis Sheriff's Department. They've been working their tails off during this new surge of looting and rioting. So, Hutch, man, stay safe over there, you know. So, I want to give a shout-out again, too, to all the brothers and sisters that took stand over there at this last riot over here last week in Minneapolis. I want to thank Mike Cozy and his crew over there for keeping all the native businesses and Franklin Avenue safe over there. I want to say, hey, thank you, Mike, and American Indian Movement, you know, Clyde, Frank, and Lisa over there, you know, keeping everything safe over there, you know. And then another shout-out I want to give, too, is always, you know, one of our famous, and he's a famous photographer, a native photographer, and he keeps up on things. So I want to say to Wabus, the rabbit, Jerry Ogunash, and his queen over there, you know, so I want to thank you for that, you know. And another shout-out, kind of reminder thing from the Ho-Chunk Nation. They told me to say that one of our legislators told us that if you didn't receive that $1,500 COVID relief money, you know, they said it's still available for you, and contact the Treasury either online or calling. You know, they but that money is there, and if you didn't receive that $1,500, it's waiting for you. Uh-huh. And yeah, and remember, too, to the Ho-Chunk Nation, too, that, you know, during this pandemic, that we're capping stuff is like that. But they want to give me a reminder that there's going to be a $900 a month till December, and then they're going to figure it out after December. But $900 a month, you know. And the other thing, too, is that there's still that second round of money for that COVID rental assistance up to $700. So, and you contact Patty and Housing. And another thing we want to see, and me and Chuska talked about it earlier, is that I guess they don't know exactly yet, but I'll keep you informed. But President White Eagle has not called for a special general counsel meeting, even though it's been requested by several district branches. But I think they figured that one out right now. So just stay tuned on that. And the other thing, another reminder that they wanted me to say to a whole chunk relatives up here in the Twin Cities that, you know, even though that farm to family giveaway for the food and vegetables and milk and stuff, it ended. But they said stay tuned because they're thinking on starting it up again. So cool. That's the other thing, you know, and the events I got here is that Four Sisters, they told me to remind you about this. Four Sisters Farmers Market is open every Thursday, 12 to 3 until Labor Day. And another thing I wanted to say is that during that thing on Thursday, American Indian Movement is selling T-shirts, small red to XL, red or black, and they're selling AIM, American Indian Movement masks, and they're $10 for them. And then they also got baseball hats, American Indian Movement baseball hats, and they're selling them too. And cool. And I'm gonna let Chuske start off with them important events right now, because you got a lot more information.
Well, I'd thank Pini Gigi, Uncle Curtis. I just want to remind everyone and thank everyone that's donated to our Patreon, and that's Patreon Native Roots Radio Network. We really, really appreciate it. It's helping us stay on the air. And then also, I just want to give a shout out to we do a show called Rock the Vote Native Style on 2 p.m., and you can see it on Facebook, but it's 2 p.m. on AM 950 on Tuesdays, and then we have Pilots Progressive Party on Wednesday at 5, and then, of course, Native Roots Radio that you're listening to right now on Saturdays 1 to 3, and then you can see all those on Facebook Live. Also, we have we do a symposium every week, and last week's was unbelievable. If you want to catch that, that's going to be replayed on Sundays on AM 950, commercial free from 6 to 8, and it's also on Facebook Live right now, and it was the Women of Wounded Knee last week, and it was just an unbelievable 2 hours of that. There was three ladies, Stephanie Autumn, a professor, and of course Madonna Thunderhawk, that were there during Wounded Knee and talking about their experience and what they were up to now, and it was really, really mind-blowing and very emotional, too, mm-hmm. during that. Also, we got the, I think, I don't know, if, are you going to talk about Radicalized? The vote is going to be on, is on Saturday all day from 11 to 11, and matter of fact, Emma Needham and I will be on at 4 o'clock today, Central Time, and catch us speaking our truth about what's going on in Turtle Island and how we can radicalize the vote. So that's about all I have with things going on, but we're rocking the vote here, Uncle Curtis. Do you have a Gaga?
I got a couple more. I got a couple more okay. on there right
let's
now.
Do you
mind?
No, let's do
hey,
it.
Another one event coming up. It's for my birthday. It's a fundraiser for the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Abuse Coalition, you know, and I got their back, and yeah, just check out the site. If you can, whatever you can throw in on that, that'll be great, you know. And remember to, on the census again, you know, that's coming up again, you know. So get the Native vote out, and that's it. What I got for events, Chushka.
Yeah, and one quick thing about the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Coalition, you can find Uncle Curtis on Facebook and donate to his birthday fundraiser. That's awesome. Uncle Curtis West, look him up on Facebook. And do you have a Gaga, Uncle Curtis?
Yeah, I got some Native wisdom that I got told, and I really thought it was kind of appropriate for today. It says, be tolerant of those who are lost on their path. Ignorance, conceit, anger, jealousy, and greed stem from a lost soul. Pray that they will find guidance.
Well, Pini Gigi, for all you do, Uncle Curtis, thank you for being on this week. I would like to end with these thoughts. If you are listening to the show, you are the resistance. From Chief Plenicoops, the ground on which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. You've been listening to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and I've been your host, Robert Pilot. The revolution is kicking into high gear, and I would like to thank all my listening audience, our sponsors, and especially our guests which make this show. If you are listening to the show, you are the resistance. We're still here. We are the seventh generation. Free Leonard Peltier.